You are tearing me apart, Lisa!
My girlfriend sucked 37 dicks.
In a row?
Hey, buddy, you gonna eat that sausage?
No, go past this. Past this part. In fact, never play this again.
Tell me something, my friend.
Am I the only one around here who gives a shit about the role?
Ladies and gentlemen!
Your complete attention, if you please.
The Epic Film Guys Podcast. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 150
of the
Epic Film Guys Podcast. And, we are also today celebrating exactly to the day 3 years of the Epic Film Guys Podcast. That's right.
Ow!
Yeah, baby. July 2nd, 2015 was when that solo episode of me just talking into my phone about Terminator Genisys was first released, thus ushering in the Epic Film Guys Podcast that would come to be. So welcome, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us. I, of course, am Nick.
What's up? I'm Epic Film Guy Justin, and I say this all the time on the show, but I can't say enough. I can't believe we've been doing this long for this amount of time.
It's crazy, man.
It's insane. I mean, I saw a picture pop up. I like Time Hop. I talk about it to you all the time. Time Hop makes me remember things that I did, and it also makes me feel old on a daily basis because I'm like, oh my God, that was 2 years ago. Oh my God, that was 5 years ago. And it was 3 years ago when I saw a picture of myself standing in front of the Terminator Genisys poster, like, you know, whatever my fucking tagline was for it. Let's hope that this cybernetic organism still kicks some ass or some corny shit like that. I think it was something like that. Wow, man. Wow.
So yeah, 3 years, 150 episodes. So to celebrate, ladies and gentlemen, we have planned nothing. I did a big thing for episode 100, and I really actually am proud of how good episode 100 turned out. I essentially took 1 minute of every single Epic Film Guys podcast and cut it together into one episode. So the first minute was from episode 1, the second minute from episode 2, and so on. And I had to adjust very little outside of that just because I didn't want it to begin mid-word and end mid-word, so I would take full sentences and stuff. And I cut out sections where it recorded different promos. None of that's really all that important. The important thing is, go check that out. We will definitely do something huge next year when we hit 200, because we're going to hit 200 episodes. If we don't miss any weeks, which we shouldn't, we should hit that sometime right in probably May, probably right around live stream for The Cure 3 next year should be episode 200. That would be crazy if they were like the same week. Oh, wait, no, because then it would just be like some random stupid release.
Hopefully it'll be separated out. Give it enough time to make it special. Yeah,
we'll wait. If that's what happens, if the timing works out that way, we will postpone the celebration until after live stream 3, and then we will come back with a massive like blowout celebration. It'll be really, really, really fun and awesome. But if you're just joining us for the first time, welcome. We super appreciate you being here. We're going to talk about a few changes that are becoming into the Epic Film Guys over the course of the next month or so. They're just going to roll in gradually without a lot of fanfare other than me talking about them right now. And we're just going to be having a hell of a lot of fun tonight. Justin and I both got to see Sicario, Day of the Soldado.
You said it right.
I don't know what that means.
I was hoping you would say it right because I knew if I said it, I'd butcher it.
So I don't know what that means. Thank you for doing that. I don't know what a soldado is or a Sicario is. So
I thought you spoke Spanish.
No, I took German in college.
Wait, they let you take German in college? What the hell?
Right? And I am German. It's like, that's my heritage. So I was like, yeah, I'd much rather take German in high school. So that was what I did. And yeah, it was nice. But yeah, dude, I don't know. We'll talk about it. But I still have never seen the first one, which was done by Denis Villeneuve. So I never saw the first one. And should I go back and watch the first one? We'll see how I feel about that after we talk about it.
I'll tell you right now, but I'm going to wait. I'd like to tell you right now, but no, I'm going to wait.
You hush. You'll tell me nothing.
I got to give some major props over to everyone that followed on our social media over the weekend. We put out a poll for you guys. We like doing that once in a while for you to pick something for us to review. We threw out there. We wanted to hear from you. What was the next film of the Friday the 13th franchise that you wanted the sauce, that good old Loy sauce and me to review?
A1 Loy steak choss sauce.
A motherfucking steak sauce, Loy choss. Boss.
Eventually, we still have to have the soundboard in here just to do the Loy sauce sound drop.
You know, people are going to miss just that. Yeah, people are going to miss just that. But yeah. You guys voted, and the winner, which is the runner-up on the first time we had a vote before we did Jason Lives, which is Friday the 13th, the final chapter, which we just showed at Alamo Drafthouse DC, which I introduced. And for those of you that are interested, I will be also introducing Jason Lives on Friday the 13th of this month at Alamo Drafthouse DC in Ashburn at 10 p.m. Come on out, win some prizes, hear me babble on about the movie, maybe probably half drunk by the time you get there because it'll be 10 o'clock and whatever, but come out for that. Epic Film Guys sponsored showing of Jason Lives, Friday the 13th, yeah. Part 6. But yeah, thanks for voting. We love when you guys vote and participate. And it was the sauce's idea. Why don't we have the fans choose which film we should do? So we haven't done it yet. We're going to do it. We're going to release it on Friday the 13th.
It's because whenever we tell the sauce to do stuff, he doesn't do it. So maybe if the fans tell him to do stuff, he'll do it.
I mean, I don't know. He said to me he still wants to do that, like, year in film so far video. And then he came over.
When's he going to do it? November?
Well, he bought the Super NES Mini and the NES Mini, which I didn't expect him to be the type to do that. But he bought them, and then he brought them over this weekend. Obviously, we got nothing film-related done. He just played video games, so that's it.
Because he wanted
to play a
Super Nintendo emulator on a 4K TV.
Dude, they have three different versions. They've got one where you can, or like three different settings. You can make it look like it's a shitty TV. You can look at it like it's normal. Then they have an HD version of it. So, of course, I'm going to watch the HD version of the game. But it is weird, dude. I'm not going to lie. It looks a little bit weird.
Yeah.
That and the controllers, the cords on them are just so short. So I feel like they purposely made them like that so you would have to do what you did when you were a kid and sit on your fucking, like, Indian style in front of your TV. Like, I can't sit on my couch.
But the problem is when you were a kid and you used to play Nintendo sitting like 2 feet from your TV was like 19 inches.
It was
like a tiny, teeny little fucking TV, you know, and nowadays TVs are like 60 inches, 70 inches. Like, they're massive, huge TVs, and you do not need to be sitting like 5 feet away from them. So I hated that the cords were so short on it. That's actually why I refused to buy the NES Mini, the first one that came out. And the SNES Mini, no Chrono Trigger and no Final Fantasy III means no sale.
I know nothing
for this
of
guy.
Those games. I know you've mentioned them. I know
But this is why, like, we know Dan's going to say it when he listens. We know Justin's not a gamer.
I played fucking video games all weekend, and Loy Sauce left the systems here, and I've continued to play them. I love old systems, but it led me to want to think about buying the Sega Genesis thing that's pretty much the same thing. It's got like 70 games stored in it, but I've read some reviews that like Sonic the Hedgehog is just like a demo and not the full game.
That's the other shitty thing about both of those systems from Nintendo is that they package them up, and it's a kind of little nifty gift ideas for whomever, whatever, but there's no expandable memory. There's no option. Like in 2018, there's no option to connect it and download more games into the system.
Right, and
you can buy a memory stick for like $10 now that can hold every single SNES and NES game on it, period. Like, right. That's how far technology has advanced in terms of microprocessing and things like that. But they still made it so you can't alter the number of games that you can store in the memory of that system, which I think is complete shit. Like,
well, you know why,
but they have them all for sale. Well, no, it's because they have them all for sale in the Nintendo Marketplace for the Switch and for the Wii because they want people to pay the money for them individually
over
the Nintendo Marketplace. That's why. But
I'll tell you right now, I don't own these uses of the sauces. They're just left here, and I did not strong arm him to have him leave them here. He decided to leave them here so he could play them on the big screen TV. But I just said I would buy one myself if they had fucking the Batman Returns beat 'em up game for Super NES, because I love that game. But of course, it doesn't come with. Yeah, but whatever. It's cool. That's what I did. What did you do over the weekend? Did you do anything fun?
I had I feel like I'm still kind of coming down from the weekend. So Friday, we do anything Friday? No, nothing Friday. And then Saturday, there's a distillery that just opened up not too long ago.
Ooh.
Over in Apalachin. It's only about 5 minutes or so from where I live. So right over in Apalachin, they do basically whiskey spirits. So they're all different flavored whiskeys. I actually bought a jalapeno ginger whiskey that they do. It's only about 35% alcohol. You use it to make drinks. They basically do a version of a Moscow Mule with it, but the jalapeno and ginger flavors in it are so well balanced, and it really does make a kick-ass cocktail. So I bought a bottle of that. They've got some other good flavors and some other not-so-good flavors. They're releasing a cinnamon one this Thursday, so we're going back this Thursday because, Justin, I've already told you about this food truck. I will tell you about this food truck every single time I can. Smoky Legend Barbecue was there this past Saturday, and they're going to be there again on the 5th, and their brisket is legitimately to die for. It's amazing. Like, I bought an extra brisket sandwich, and I didn't eat it there. I ate a pulled pork meal while I was there at the distillery, and then I devoured that brisket sandwich as soon as I got home because I didn't want to reheat it. I wanted to eat it when it was still pretty warm, and man, so good. So good. So
tell me that you have not been doing the same thing I've been doing and binge watching the second season of Glow, because I totally have been doing that.
We're one episode away from we only have one episode left in it.
Okay. Don't spoil anything, but I'm just saying I love that show so much. God, do I love that show.
I love the 80s aesthetic of it, and I love how much they embrace like the cheesy over the top-ness of wrestling in the show. Did you get to the episode where they just do like the whole actual Glow show, and you're just watching it like as if it were just like a Saturday morning wrestling program?
I've not watched that yet.
That is great, dude. You're gonna love it. You're gonna love it when you get there. It's literally the entire show, it's them all in character, like as if it were just like a normal Saturday morning wrestling show. It's fucking awesome, dude.
I gotta say, man, out of all the shows that try to emulate the 80s, which there are a lot. Thank you, Stranger Things. But I still love you, Stranger Things. But because of that, like, now every single other movie or show is trying to emulate it. I feel like for the most part, Glow gets it really right. Glow, like, the wardrobe, the look of everything, the way people acted and dressed, like Glow literally the whole spirit of the 80s. It nails it. So I love that show. I can't wait to finish it. But I'm going to be sad because then I won't have any more Glow to watch.
Yeah, no, we've got one episode left. I actually watched a couple tonight before I did that. So Saturday we did the distillery barbecue truck, and then we went over to our friends' houses. They actually went to the distillery with us. We went back to their place a little bit later that day, and we had a little fire outside, and the girls roasted some marshmallows and stuff. I took some of my homebrew beers over for my buddy to try because I do homebrews with him, and that was really nice. Yesterday, we had like a graduation party for one of my nieces. So
sweet, dude.
My brother and literally all of my sisters. So I have a stepsister that lives in Chicago. I have one that lives in Florida, and my sister lives in Maryland. So everybody was in town. Like, everybody was here. So it was really, really nice. We got to do like some family pictures. We only get to do them like once every 5 years when all of us are in the same place at the same time. And, you know, that was pretty fun, even though it was sweltering.
Dude, you look like it. You look like you're a piece of fucking Kentucky Fried Chicken, man. You look like you're a little bit burnt there. You've been tanning, bro?
No, I've been slathering on the Colonel's Secret Recipe, baby. That's what I've been doing. I've been outside, and I actually went on Saturday, even though it was sweltering. I still got two miles in because I got to make sure I'm getting my exercise and everything like that in. But, I mean, I'm a big fat guy, so I step one step out the door, and the humidity and the heat are so much, I'm just like...
It's like hell out there, dude. Yeah, so I definitely commend you and give you the props for doing anything. I mean, I go out on my work breaks and I do walks, and then, you know, but like the past week, even today, dude, I went outside like no one was outside. There was like a heat advisory. It said not to go outside. I went outside anyways. It's bad, dude. So just be careful while you're out there. Make sure you get your water.
Yeah, I chugged about a half a gallon of water before I went on that walk. So speaking of chugging, Justin, and liquids and liquid refreshment and all those kinds of things, there's something we've been doing on the show for almost the entire 3-year run. And of course, I am talking about that little thing that we love to call,
what are you drinking?
I'm back. Puke and rally.
Woo! Give me a beer. Justin, I'm going to kick it over to you first so I can find out what I just heard a can open. You best tell me what that is.
Ooh.
You best tell. Wait, see,
I'm going to pour this. I've had it on tap. I have not drank it out of a can yet, though.
Ooh,
so
baby.
I'm just going to pour it so you can look at it there.
Damn, that looks like cranberry juice, dude.
It's not what you think it is.
Ooh. It's insanely dark, but it looks like, is it red or is it black?
There's some red in there.
Okay.
But there's, it's a, this is the Crooked Run Brewing's Neapolitic. It's their imperial milk stout with strawberries, vanilla, and chocolate.
Oh.
It's basically their version of a Neapolitan ice cream stout.
Oh,
this fucker is 10%
God.
Alcohol by volume. And I had like one glass, a small glass of it when my brother-in-law was in town 2 weeks ago. Before they were closing, we were like the only people left in there. And I was like, dude, I have to have that. And then I drank one small glass and I bought a 4-pack and I totally forgot they were in there. So I'm drinking it now and I'm about to take a sip to tell you what I think.
Oh, baby.
Definitely taste the strawberry in there. The vanilla and chocolate are blended nicely. The chocolate's more on the back end. Super thick mouthfeel. But dude, I'm telling you, it's like I'm drinking alcoholic Neapolitan ice cream. It's that creamy and it's that like thick. It's
that
big.
Is amazing.
It's a big flavor. I don't know, man. I'm probably going to drink just this one and be good for the night. We'll see. But wow, that's powerful, dude.
Nice.
It's good.
That sounds absolutely amazing.
Yeah. So on the other hand, I'd like to know what you have. What are you drinking yourself?
I feel like you were trying to think of something else more clever to say there. And you were just like, yeah, fuck it.
Well, you know, I want to go higher. I want to go higher and longer, but I did that already. We've been down that road, so I don't think I can go there anymore.
I think you're going to go deeper, harder and deeper, and a little faster.
Ooh. And it's going to sound like I'm doing my monster voice for a B-sides episode.
What do you got guzzling down your gullets?
And I'll start doing my death metal voice. It's been quite a few years since I've done it, but
yeah, you got to practice.
I was going to ask you. I'll ask you flat off, dude. Yeah. What the fuck are you drinking, dude? Yeah. What do you got?
So speaking of the 80s, and I tagged you on Untappd when I drank this beer for the first time last week.
What?
This is Harpoon's Limey Vice, a play on Miami Vice. And I know Justin especially is a huge fan of the Vice. The look on his face right now, I wish sometimes.
Oh my God,
podcasting...
do they even use the same font, dude? They use the same font.
Same font and everything. It's legitimately, like, you know, just... complete homage. Like I said, I know Justin loves his Miami Vice. If you can find this, get it. It is a lime goza, and it's actually got a nice salty kind of lime finish to it. You get that lime up front. It's got a nice sour to it. And then, like I said, the salt comes on the back end and tempers it out a little bit. And it's got a really, really nice mouthfeel.
Mouthfeel.
That thing. Speaking of mouthfeel, congratulations to Emily of the story behind for finishing her book. We love you. Congratulations. That's absolutely amazing.
Congratulations.
Just got to get it into a publisher and then we will have it in our hands. And I absolutely cannot wait to check out the book. It's going to be really, really, really exciting. So yeah, Justin, if you can find this beer anywhere, I would definitely recommend checking it out. I don't know how big a fan of the Goza Sale you are. But this is one of the better ones that I've had.
I've been liking Gozas a lot more lately. I've been moving more away from the IPAs any chance I can get with sours and Gozas and a lot more stouts. Even though, like, usually, as far as stouts go, I'm usually only a stout guy during the fall and winter. But lately, I'm just, like, these dessert stouts just keep coming around. I'm like, fuck it. Yeah. Whatever.
This
I need more variety
actually,
in my life.
With the heat, especially that we're having right now, this is the perfect outdoor summer beer.
Yeah,
it's nice,
dude,
it's light,
definitely.
It's crisp,
good
it's got
pounder.
That citrusy backbone to it. Perfect. Just absolutely perfectly refreshing for the outdoor experience. So yeah, it's absolutely amazing. So you actually had a little bit, I think we had a little bit of news that we were going to dig into here up at the top of the show before we dug into our review of Sicario Day of the Soldado.
Day of Soldado, that's right. And just so you know, I did look up while we were talking there. Soldado is soldier, okay? That's what it
Day
means in Spanish.
Day of the Soldier, okay.
And
okay.
Sicario is hitman, for those that are uninitiated with that lingo. So there
you
go.
This would
be
one of those things that if I had watched the original film, I would probably understand that.
It's
probably.
Okay. I only allowed you to watch this one without seeing the first one because you didn't watch the first one. And I told you to watch the first one, so I said, fuck it, why don't you go see the second one anyway? I don't know. We'll get to the first and the second when we get to that review, but yes, so I actually had an opportunity, and don't hate me, I know I can feel the hateful speech spewing towards me already. A lot of people in the cinephile community have had a chance to see this as well. It's the new
a lot of our fans Fred have been Rogers posting it over in the Hopester's Dumpster as well. Brentley, Jared Taylor.
Documentary Won't You Be My Neighbor, which is a full out documentary about Mr. Rogers, that man that, yes, the majority of us got home from school, we sat down and we watched. For me, it was an experience mostly at my grandparents' house because I got home from school there. They would watch me before I went home. And he was a huge impact on my life. And I feel like there is no equivalent. There's no modern equivalent in today's media for children that could possibly live up to the legacy of Fred Rogers. So this is a documentary basically about him. It's directed by Morgan Neville, Academy Award-winning documentarian for 20 Feet from Stardom, which won Best Documentary Feature at the 2014 Academy Awards. I went into this excited, obviously, and I also went into this with tissues in hand waiting to bawl my fucking eyes out. And it wasn't that at all, actually. It was definitely way more of an uplifting, inspirational experience. I don't want to give too much away, and to be fair, if there's not really a lot to give away, if you had seen the film, Nick, there'd be plenty for us to talk about back and forth, but I really want you to experience this firsthand for yourself. I know that where you live, you talk about it every week.
My goddamn market ever gets it. I know, dude.
I know. Either way, even if you don't get it, I plan on purchasing it on Blu-ray. It's that good. But I did cry. Make no mistake. There's the opening of the documentary, I can tell you this, is vintage footage of him going to a school where there's a group of children sitting around. It's not part of the show, but he's obviously known for the show. And he goes to sit down and do basically a small presentation for the children. And seeing how he interacted with the children and seeing how much care and effort and how much he loved children immediately brought a tear to my eye. Like, I immediately cried. Like, I don't care about, you know, trying to be a tough guy or whatever. Like, it hit me emotionally from the beginning. So it starts out on that note and it lets you leave the theater feeling so uplifted, but also in a way, Nick, somewhat depressed, because you know that that type of public figure in the eyes of children is just an extinct thing. It's no longer an important thing, I think, in our culture and our society to have someone like that. And that was someone that we looked up to. He was our friend. He was almost like a grandfather or an uncle or even beyond that for those of us that grew up watching him. And it's a very in-depth, very true, very genuine look at who he was as a man, what led him to want to do what he did in the realm of television, and how important he was to what children's television is as it is today, even if it's mediocre and compared to what Mr. Rogers was doing. So if I had to give a rating to this, Nick, I'm telling you right now, it's on my list to win the Academy Award for Best Documentary Feature. I don't watch a lot of the nominated documentaries. Usually the documentaries I watch every year are true crime related. So in this case,
or the
right
odd
now,
horror documentary, whenever it pops up.
It's number one for me, man. I would straight up give this a 9 out of 10 rating if I was to sit down and rate it. There's very little I have to critique, to say anything bad about it. It was beautiful, powerful, insightful, and it literally gave you this look into the world and life of a man who's truly special. And I feel like this world is special to have had him be a part of it. So I'll leave it there. No more gloating for me. But if you have not had a chance to see it, ladies and gentlemen, if you're in the market where this is playing in your theater, please take advantage.
If it's in your market,
yeah,
I
you will not
see
a better
so
documentary
for
this
me.
Year.
Go see it in the name of Epic Film Guy Nick. I'm hoping, I'm praying that somewhere, even if Regal gets it and AMC doesn't, I'll still schlep my way over to Regal just to see that movie, because that's how excited I am for it. Even though I did pick up the Stubbs A-list, I started that, and I've gone to the movies once so far, so I need to...
You got time, bro. You got time moving to make up that $20 you paid for this month. You got plenty of time this month.
I already spent about half of it already today going to the movies to see Sicario, so... You know, it'll definitely pay for itself with how often I go to the movies for the show. I'll be able to also see a lot more random things that I normally wouldn't catch in theaters. But because it's part of the program now, it's part of the package deal, why not? But I'm just hoping, I'm hoping that we get that documentary up here. But that's the crappy thing about this market, is that a lot of times I will not get, especially stuff like a documentary, like maybe, like there's an off chance that Regal might get it. But I mean, other than that,
I know, dude. Like, no, believe me. I mean, even the Saw said when he was trying to get at his Alamo, it wasn't an easy task to get it there. Yeah. But again, like I said, this is probably one of the most genuine pieces on an individual that I've watched in a long time. And I watch a lot of documentaries on famous people in our society. So definitely recommend it. If you, again, see it, just watch it. If you have to wait till it hits Netflix or until you can buy the DVD or the Blu-ray, do it. Maybe when I buy the Blu-ray, I'll give away the digital code just because it needs to be seen by everybody. I feel like this is the movie to see.
Yeah, I certainly hope that I can get a chance to see it. If you have already seen it, let us know over in the dumpster what you thought of it. I already know that Jared and Brentley both saw it and both loved it, so it only kind of fuels my desire to see it that much more. But we, Justin, have a movie to review tonight before we roll out of the show, and that is Sicario, again, Day of the Soldado. So we are going to go ahead and take a quick break for some EFG history, including a clip from the first ever episode of the Epic Film Guys podcast, episode 1. Apologies now for the shitty sound quality, because it was me literally
I love how rough it sounds, how gritty, man. That just goes to show we are tough then.
Sounds gritty, like you're rubbing sandpaper on your ass crack. So enjoy this EFG history clip, and then we are going to be back to talk about Sicario, Day of the Soldado.
We'll be right back.
This week in Epic Film History.
This is Epic Film Guy Nick, and welcome to the Real Rundown Podcast. Today's pilot episode is Thursday, July 2nd, 2015. And this will probably be the date that we'll be doing this every week. We'll be discussing, of course, film. This will give me an opportunity to just kind of muse on and on and on and on endlessly as far as my feelings on the films of the day, blockbusters, everything, etc., etc., etc. We're going to have Epic Film Guy Justin in and Epic Film Guy Joe and other people, I'm sure, down the road. But for today, just the pilot episode, we're going to be doing this one solo.
The first thought that came into my mind that I posted to my Facebook account the morning after seeing Legend of Tarzan was, when your lead actor thought he was signing up for a Tarzan-themed photo shoot for Playgirl and not a role in a feature-length motion picture that required actual acting ability. Loy Sauce. His name is Loy Sauce. His name is Loy Sauce. Yes, his name is Loy Sauce. His name is Loy Sauce.
I need to isolate this as its own sound drop.
I'm sure you enjoyed the part where they made a joke about him sucking the ape's balls, right?
No. That was very strange.
That was a thing. There was a joke about him sucking a gorilla's cock. That's for real. Like, am I wrong? Did I miss that?
No, that's in the film. Who was this movie made for?
Exactly. Is there someone out there that wants to see Samuel L. Jackson suck a gorilla's dick? A CGI gorilla's dick? I don't know.
The chronology of this series is a muddled just clusterfuck on top of another clusterfuck sandwiched in between two slices of bread and covered with some spicy hot mustard.
I've been being stalked lately, Nick. And I've been being stalked by a guy who has been masquerading as a monkey. He's been wearing he's either a straight up adult gorilla or he's a man wearing a monkey suit. And I see in the back seat of his car he's got a huge box of jerky, gold marinade jerky. Now, I don't know if this guy is for real or not, but I just have to tell you this right now. I'm kind of scared. I've been debating on calling the police or not, but I swear to God, last night, when I was driving home from the grocery store to get a couple beers, I looked in my rearview mirror and I looked like I saw a gorilla. I mean, a real gorilla driving this car. And then when I searched the back of the car after I got out later on that night, I saw jerky gold.
Now listen, Justin, I don't want to alarm you, but that was not a real gorilla. That was just a man in a suit. And more specifically, it was a man in a suit, and his name is Matt Parks.
Until next Thursday, thank you very much for listening, film fans, and I will see you at the movies.
And welcome back, film fans, and thanks for hanging out with us here on the Epic Film Guys podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're about to get into our main part of the show. We're going to do a review of a little movie that landed in theaters last week, Sicario, Day of the Soldado, which is a follow-up, a sequel to I'm going to say his name right this episode. I promise you guys. Denis Villeneuve's Sicario, which hit theaters in 2015. That's close to what I said on the first few times that I mentioned his name on the show.
I know Denis. It took us a long time to break you of Denis.
I even said Denis on our Blade Runner 2049 review, but I think that most people thought I was serious. I just said it as a joke, but people just took it as he's still fucking up his name, so... whatever. Okay, so him out of the picture, because let's leave his name totally out of the conversation about this film we just watched. This is the sequel to his film, also written by Taylor Sheridan, who wrote the first film. This film follows a drug war that's on the U.S.-Mexican border that's escalated as cartels have begun trafficking terrorists across the U.S. border, or as they want us to think they are. To fight the war, federal agent Matt Graver, Josh Brolin, back again in the sequel, reteams with the Mercurial Alejandro, played by Benicio del Toro, to fight the cartels. So, okay, a sequel to Sicario was never anything that, in my mind, upon watching the first film, ever thought to be a good idea. I never thought that it's not a movie that could really allow a sequel. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do in that world, but a sequel, per se, it didn't make any sense. We knew that Emily Blunt wasn't going to come back for the sequel. She's off doing Mary Poppins or something else, whatever the hell she's doing, and rightly so. She's going to be a great Mary Poppins. This is the sequel. You saw it, Nick, and tell our audience a little bit about your experience, because you didn't see the first Sicario, did you?
Yep, I have never seen the first film. Huge fan of Denis Villeneuve, though I am. I have never
Denis
seen
Villeneuve?
It. Denis Villeneuve, as big a fan of his as I am, I have never seen the original film. So for me, this was walking in a little bit cold. I wasn't sure if this was going to be a film that played really, really well without the kind of requisite backstory or whatever the requisite character piece that you got in the first film. I don't know. I'm going to have to go back and watch it now, obviously, to kind of fill in those blanks. So, obviously, Villeneuve not returning here, but Taylor Sheridan still penning the script for this. And
that's right.
We both love Taylor Sheridan.
That's correct. And, you know, it's hard for me because I really want to jump in here, but I'm going to start off with one of the opening sequences in the film, which I think really sets the tone for what this film is going to be. It's a suicide bombing that occurs in a Kansas City grocery store that kills 15 people. The way in which this scene is staged, put together, and shot is extremely unnerving, extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah, very effective. I think it's very effective of everything. Like in terms of like visualizing like a terror attack, like seeing it cinematically, it's about as chilling as you can get.
I don't think I've seen it that well done before, to be honest with you, Nick.
I would agree, probably.
I knew that. I just felt that sense of dread. I knew shit was about to hit the fan. And we actually see one or two explosions go off in the middle of this grocery store. And then we see a young mother pick up her daughter and beg one of the bombers, like, you don't need to do this. Please don't. And then he literally just kills them all.
Yep.
That literally set the tone for the movie that I was about to watch. And I knew they were not fucking around. Now, make no mistake, the first Sicario is no cakewalk. You see some seriously dark stuff in that one. But I feel like in this, they really had to set the tone to be like, hey, this is what we're doing. We're not fucking around. And as you mentioned earlier, this film is not directed by Denis Villeneuve. It's directed by a man named Stefano Sollima, which is an Italian director who's done pretty much just a couple of television series. No films, no major motion pictures. I don't know if he was recommended, but I'll say this much coming right out. Villeneuve is sorely missing in this. You immediately notice that lack of that special touch that he puts on all of his films. It's missing the layers that he adds to his characters for me. I don't know how you felt about it, Nick, if you felt the same way.
I'm going to give it like a temporary rating, we'll say, when we get to the end of this discussion, because I feel like that there are pieces that I'm missing. In terms of Roland's character, in terms of Del Toro's character, there's pieces I'm missing from these characters because they don't, you know, you don't get to develop any of these characters in this film. No character really has a whole lot of development except for one, which we'll talk about in short order here.
Yes, that's right.
But I mean, a lot of these characters are relatively static, and this film very much plays like a sequel that kind of needs you to know who these characters were.
A little bit. I feel like a little bit. I mean, we do get some backstory, a little bit through exposition that's just mentioned briefly in parts.
Yeah, but I feel like you need that emotional tie to it to understand or to maybe to kind of connect with a little bit more. I think probably better.
The only character that you really need to connect with is the character that we connect with the most, which is Alejandro, played wonderfully again by Benicio del Toro. He is the soul of this movie, and he is, in my opinion, the only reason why the parts that work do work.
Every performance in this film is great. I'll say that from the outset. I think every performance in this film is fantastic.
I don't know if I agree with you on that, but I love Del Toro.
Except for one.
There
was one where it was that actor or actress was severely phoning it in. Severely.
So Del Toro's great here. Obviously, we're not spoiling anything for you, Nick, even though you haven't seen the first film, but we know that his family was taken from him by a cartel leader. Part of the plot in this film is they are deciding to start a cartel war to make them kill each other off, because guess what? That's what Americans do, I guess. They want to go in, cause people to kill each other, because as they say in a meeting with military officials, our targets are much easier to kill when they're killing each other. So they're going in to cause trouble to make the cartels think that they're causing hits against each other, and then shit hits the fan, and as Loy Sox likes to say, hijinks ensue.
Loy Sox?
Loy Sox. No, it's Loy Sox. He's wearing some Loy Sox over there.
Loy Sox.
God damn it. But in that, we do see a very impressive scene where they go down and they kidnap a cartel leader's daughter, Isabel Reyes, played by none other than Isabella Moner. That's their plan, basically, is to go in, take the daughter out, make him think that the other local cartel is attempting to start a war with them, so that way they can infiltrate information on who it possibly was that caused the Kansas City grocery store attack.
Yep.
And that's where we follow them with, you know, I gotta tell you this right off the bat. I know what they were going for with the Isabel Reyes character. She's a spunky little fighter chick type daughter of a cartel drug lord. But I really found this character extremely unlikable in every possible way. I did not like the way that this young actress played the character, and I never felt any sense of empathy or any emotion towards this character throughout all of the trials and tribulations that she went through in this film. All of this, the little bits of danger that we saw this character go through, I never felt for her once.
I don't dislike the performance that she gives. I just think, unfortunately, and this is going to come up a number of other times in this discussion as well, the script does not give her character a lot to chew on. I think if you would have kind of seen more of her backstory, if you would have kind of seen more of her relationship with her father to see where this attitude comes from. I mean, obviously we know.
We get none.
We get none. And so we obviously know that she's the daughter of a cartel leader, and we can assume from her opening scene that she basically thinks she's cock of the walk because she's a cartel leader's daughter and that she can kind of do whatever she wants. Like, it would have been nicer to see, like, maybe more of that family dynamic, maybe, like, see, like, the fear that she has for her father or whatever. But, I mean, unfortunately, there's some things about this script and about these characters that are pretty muddied that never really seem to get resolved, or you never really, all of a sudden, like, they kidnap her, and then they're trying to basically make it look like the one cartel did it versus the Reyes cartel so they can start a war between the cartels. And then all of a sudden, like, they're like, no, we're going to take her back. Well, we can't leave her in Mexico. She's going to get killed, and blah, 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 this, and blah, 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 that. And, like, the film, I think pacing-wise, I think it moves too fast in some points to really just let you digest the kind of sense of danger that's supposed to pervade in this film, especially in the second half.
To the point, Nick, where there's literally no sense of buildup for me.
There's no tension in this film at all.
No sense of suspense at all. There's no tension.
None.
Minus a wonderful score.
The score is fantastic.
Yeah, which was done by...
I tried to pronounce his name when I was reading it, and I was like, what? Hildur Guadnadottir? Guadnadottir? There's a lot of accents over those fucking letters. Jesus.
Other than the score itself, Nick, I felt like this movie moved too quick for any buildup to happen. And that's where I'm going to find me comparing it to the first one, because the first one at its core is a straight up suspense thriller. right. drama thriller, I would say, because there's great dramatic parts in it, very character driven. It's like nails on a chalkboard, some scenes where you're like, with these characters, you're extremely tense and you're scared on what's going to happen to them. And in this movie, things just happen. It's like, all right, we're going to go one set piece. Oh, all right, it's going to slow down. We'll get some character stuff. Oh, here's the next one. And none of them actually play through very well. In my opinion, it felt like they were trying to go more commercial. Like, this is going to be, let's make it a little bit more action oriented. Let's make it more like it's a straight up like war movie. And those sequences play out okay, but they're done and over with like that. There's no real back and forth. Like, we don't get a really serious gun battle throughout the whole fucking movie. Yeah. You know, if you're going to give me a real good gun battle, then please. But there's one scene, I think that's the closest thing we get to that. And I know we're jumping all over the place, but it's when they're bringing Isabel back to the border and they're using Mexican police as an escort. And then they turn on them because they're working for Reyes. And then they're caught in the gunfire. They've got them in the front and in the back. And then they're forced to obviously kill them. This was not part of the plan. So killing Mexican police was not part of the plan at all. And then we see them brutally take them down. But it's done in 5 minutes, dude. It's not even five minutes.
It's not like, even 5 minutes. Yeah, it's so quick. It happens so quickly. And you have no time to really to really kind of digest it. And there's something else that I want to mention here too, while we're talking about part of this. There's a scene in this film, and I mean, obviously, if you've ever listened to the Epic Film Guys, you know we just do discussions of these films. We want to delve into all their aspects, and you can't do that without spoiling them. So if you've not seen the film and you want to not be spoiled, keep that in mind. But there's a scene in this film, Justin, where Elijah Rodriguez, he plays Miguel Hernandez in the film, and he is like,
God, you're bringing up that character.
Yeah, he is this young, young Hispanic character who basically he becomes a border crosser, you know, a guide to help illegals cross the border, to smuggle people across the border because he's a U.S. citizen.
Money.
He has a U.S. Yes. passport, so he can move across the border himself relatively freely, you know, so it's easy for him to get back to Mexico and then lead the next group in. But anyway, there's a scene in a parking lot where he eyes Benicio Del Toro's character in the connect.
Oh my God. My Vision. Blood's boiling with you talking about
and,
it.
And it's a scene boiling. Where they connect. It's a scene where they connect. So then later on in the film, when you find out that they're going to have to, Benicio Del Toro's character, Alejandro and Isabel are going to have to try to get smuggled across the border as illegals, you know 100% what's going to happen. You absolutely know that they're going to call back to that moment because the script goes so far out of its way to call attention to this moment. And it feels forced and it feels a little bit artificial.
Dude, that character is a plot device in every sense of the meaning. That's the only reason why that character is in
this
film.
Well, the shitty thing about it is he pops up once every half an hour.
Dude, there's no point for him to be in there. I never feel any emotional attachment to this character. We meet this character. He's leaving his mother's house. He's got brothers and sisters. And then he goes off to meet who I think is a distant family member.
His cousin.
And to meet another cousin. I don't know if that's lingo for just being
distant.
I don't know anything about that, if they're actually relatives or not. But then to go be, this guy that's going to pull people from Mexico into the U.S. over the Texas border and make money off of it. We never get anything about who this character is.
Nothing.
What his motivations are, other than that he wants
Zero.
To make money. And that he wants to be...
You spend...
An assassin.
Maybe, you spend maybe 60 seconds with him every half an hour of screen time or so. They cut back to him really quickly just to remind you that he's going to play a role in the plot later.
Think about it. If you
That's
took him
the
out
kind
of
script writing that you see. And I'm really disappointed in Sheridan for
so
this.
Because unfortunate, dude.
He,
so disappointed.
Sheridan it has done some really, really great scripts where he's really done a lot of really great character work. I do not know what happened in this film because it seems to be all over the place. It seems to be messy.
Is.
It's just like,
but,
and then, you know, there's long drawn out scenes that I think are really good. And they remind me more of what I think Sheridan does well, like the scene at the farm, or I don't know if it's a farm necessarily, but at the guy, the sign language guy,
probably the best speak. Scene in the film,
probably the best
whole
scene in
the
film,
part and of the film,
that
I feel
family,
like,
that family gets more development than Isabel or Miguel get in the entire film. And they're not even a crucial plot point to it. They're just a stopping point along the way.
Well, because we get to slow down, we get some time to breathe.
It's like they remembered for a moment that you need to slow down once in a while in a film and just let the material breathe, let you get to... I say it so many times, 150 episodes, how many times have I said this over the years? You have to be able to connect with living, breathing characters on screen to invest yourselves in their journey. If you're just throwing them through plot beat after plot beat as fast as you can, you can't attach to any of them. It just makes it all weightless. It's dramatically weightless. There's no tension. There's no suspense. There's nothing. You just, you're watching it, and like, it's beautifully filmed. It's beautifully photographed. Darius Wolski.
I definitely have to give fantastic huge props to him because he's stepping into Roger Deakins' territory, who filmed the first Sicario, who just finally won his first Oscar for Blade Runner 2049. And a lot of fans love the first Sicario, even just for the visual look of it, let alone the story and the tension and the direction in it. He had some big shoes to fill, and obviously he shot Prometheus, which is one of the most beautiful turds that you like to mention, the most beautiful pieces of shit ever released. He also shot, you know, The Martian, Crimson Tide, Sweeney Todd, among others. But Prometheus is definitely, I think, one of the most beautiful looking movies until you find out that he shot Exodus, Gods and Kings. So maybe I should just bite my tongue a little bit. But no, he did a fantastic job, I think, but nowhere near on par with the visual sense that Deakins had in the first film. I mean, that really was just something to watch, Nick. It's one of those movies where you can just put it on. You don't have to listen to the dialogue, and you'll enjoy the visual look of the film. So, I mean, there are a lot of things that I think Sicario, Day of the Soldado have going for it. And the main thing is most definitely, I'm going to go back to his name, is Benicio del Toro. I'm going to ask you a question, because you haven't seen the first film. And you've mentioned more than one time during this review that you feel like if you watched the first film, things would connect better for you in this one. But did you feel for him? Did you feel for him as a character? Did you connect with his character?
Yes. It's simple answer to the question is yes. I do connect to his character because he is the character amongst all of the characters in the film that gets the most development. Now, I like Brolin as Graver. I think Brolin as Graver is a fantastic character. You don't really get a lot of time to kind of simmer with him. He kind of just seems like he's a hammer in terms of the type of character that he is. Like, he's just meant to kind of just be that, you know, enforcer that's going to go in and do what needs to be done. And I don't have, obviously, whatever part he played in the first film to go off of.
I mean, he's pretty much the same thing in the first one. So,
but in this film, you definitely connect, because Del Toro gives a very layered, very, very kind of emotive performance. He does a lot of stuff non-verbally, especially Benicio Del Toro is just a great actor in that sense that he can do a lot of stuff with his eyes and just a lot of stuff with his expressions to really sell a performance. You can tell that there's layers to this character. He really builds that in there. And the script does, as you said, refer back to, you know, the fact that his family's killed by the leader of the cartel. So, you know, you have those connections in there. The problem is it, like I said, when you can take the best characters in the world, and you know this as well as I do, think if there's countless examples to think of, you could take the best characters in the world, but if you throw them into a script where you don't get to just live and breathe with them in those moments on the screen, you shove them at breakneck speed through the plot. And then, like I said, the thing that pissed me off the most about this movie is the fact that as soon as you find out, I go back to it again, once you find out that they have to be smuggled across the border as illegals, you know for a fact that that stair is going to come back as a plot point in the film. It's so telegraphed.
You knew as soon as the stair happened in the first
miles
place.
Away. Well, you're right. You know that it's going to play some kind of role, but you don't know what role it's going to play yet. But you know they're going to come back to it because they linger on it so long. So long. And like I said, you could have had a whole subplot, a whole extra 5-10 minutes of screen time just devoted to Elijah Rodriguez and his family life.
Yes.
Just devoted to
give
the family life.
Give me a reason why he's
character.
In the film for
yeah,
other
why should
than
I
just
care
the,
about him, especially yeah. when your epilogue to
I
this
don't
film
care about him.
When your ending to this film is, "Oh, he wants to be an assassin." So since when? That was legitimately just something that came out of absolutely nowhere for me. Like, there was nothing like that was ever referred to.
It's not when you see him in his family life, you see him in his home with his mom and his brothers and sisters. They're not like poor. They don't live in a shack, dude. They live in a pretty decent, nice little house that's next to the border. It doesn't look like he's hurting for money. He's well dressed. He looks like a nice kid. Is that their way of saying? And I get that. There's a lot of under themes to this film.
Well, it's also it's extremely topical, especially for right now.
Of course,
things going on in the U.S., which is just.
I mean, dude, there's that shot that starts in Mexico it's almost, it's like a big crane shot that go, or I think it's actually a drone shot. It looks like a crane shot, but it's a drone shot that goes over from Mexico, over that huge border fence, then into Texas. If that wasn't like, hey, look, this is what we're dealing with right now, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it was trying to say, but it, to me, that's what it was saying. But it there's nothing that led me to believe this character needed to do these bad things other than just generic bad guy stuff. You know what I mean? Like, there's no motivation there for that character.
And I think, I mean, I don't have much else to say about this film, so I want to wrap up on it pretty quickly and get to a rating here. But I think that ultimately is kind of where this film fails. It trades out character moments, what should be just quiet character moments where you really get to learn more about the important characters, the important players in this story, especially Isabel and especially Miguel. And you don't get that. Instead, you just get shoved into another action scene. And the action scenes are all very, very well shot. They're really, really nice to watch. But they're ultimately, like I said, they're very, very weightless. Like, even like, there's one scene where one dude, I don't even know the dude's name, takes a bullet. And you're like, oh, I guess that guy, we were supposed to care that that guy took a bullet. You know, like that's the kind of film this is. It moves too quickly and it doesn't give you those moments to just enjoy the characters. It really, really doesn't. It really doesn't. And I wish for what the film's trying to say and for like, especially how topical it is and for the things that it goes into in this film, I really, really think that they could have done a much better job of humanizing everyone on both sides of this story. And I don't think this story does that. And I think that's a disservice.
I think it does it a little bit.
I'm shocked by the end of the film, for Taylor Sheridan. I really am.
Yeah, I think that the Graver character, I think, is a little bit more humanized by the end of it. But you still don't even know what his motivations are, the way that the film ends. I really don't like the ending. I'm not going to spoil the exact ending. I could say that I saw it coming a mile away. But it happens so quick, it happens out of nowhere, and it does not fit with the rest of the film or the pacing of the rest of the film. I just did not like the ending at all. So the ending was definitely one of the parts for me that was a letdown. And there's one thing that we deal with the Alejandro character, which it wants you to believe one thing about the character. And then you're like, oh my God, I can't believe that you did that with the character. And then 10 minutes later, you're like, oh, you're doing this. Oh, that's why you did it that way. Okay, so... oh, this is what you're doing with the character. For me, it was like you didn't really know what you wanted to be. You didn't really know what you wanted to do. Maybe Sheridan didn't have much time with the script, but part of me wishes that he had more time with the script and that he actually directed this, because this one of my favorite movies of last year, you remember.
Maybe he was pressured to do by the studio or something like that. Or maybe he just, maybe you're right. Maybe he did not have enough time to really fully develop this thing.
We both loved it at the end of the year last year. It both ended up on our...
really, really good. And I mean, like I said, he's proven himself, Hell or High Water, he's proven himself to be a great writer.
Great writer and a good director, too, of his own material.
Like, he creates characters, but you know what it is? Think about Hell or High Water. How many scenes do you have in that movie that slow down, that allow you to invest in the characters?
So many. It's so character-driven. Focus on the characters.
This film does not do that, and that's why I'm giving it a 5. I'm not going to recommend it. Don't go see it.
Get the fuck out of here. You're really going to do that to me?
No. Nope.
You're not going to steal my thunder. You're not going to steal my thunder. Nope, this is the first 5 out of 10 I was going to give on the show in a long time. Wow. You're actually going to take that away from me?
Wow.
Damn you. Man. I wanted to be the first one to say it, the impact.
Well,
I've been way too nice lately.
That's a resounding from the Epic Film Here's guys, ladies and gentlemen.
Here's the thing. Well-shot action sequences, but don't have any buildup.
It's empty. It's completely empty.
It's just
like that fucking dinosaur piece of shit we saw.
Hey, shut up. That was fun. That was fun.
That was popcorn entertainment. This is not. This wants to be more serious and more dramatically heavy.
It wants to be a drama, crime, thriller. Yes.
It completely misses all those beats because it doesn't invest you in the characters.
What I was hoping for, Nick, at the least, and I'll leave it at this, is because no way in my mind was it going to live up to Villeneuve's first film. It wasn't going to happen. So for me, I was just hoping for a decent crime, drama, thriller on its own. In its own right, be its own thing. And hey, if they want to make it more commercial with more action sequences, I'm all for that. I love that type of stuff. I don't care if you want to switch it up a little bit, as long as it's well done. You introduce two characters who are completely wasted and their only plot devices into the most extreme form. 5 out of 10 for me. I don't recommend this film. I feel
five out of ten.
Go watch the first one.
Yeah.
They leave it open for a sequel. I hope if they do, Sheridan has more time with the script. Maybe he directs the third one himself, or they get someone else to do it. I'm done. Huge disappointment.
Go back to that first film and remember I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm really, really intrigued to see the first film, even though this one was a little bit of a failure in my eyes, because I'm interested to see where these characters came from. And of course, I love Emily Blunt.
Way different type of film. Yeah. Way different type of film.
I love Emily Blunt, and I love Denis Villeneuve, so I'm definitely willing to check it out on those regards.
She humanizes that first film, so I'm not going to give you much more about that one, but she really makes that first film what it is, because you have the Alejandro character, you have the Graver characters that are pretty much the same characters we have in this film, but we have her as our core that we relate to, and it makes it as special as it is.
And maybe that kind of element was also missing from this film.
It definitely was.
Here's the other kicker, because I knew that Brolin and Del Toro were the two main protagonists in this movie, pretty much. You don't get to see either one of them for like 20, 25 minutes of screen time. Like, you get to go to all these other different set pieces before you finally get there. And for me, I mean, I know, granted, I'm watching a sequel without the backstory. I get it. But for me, I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, it just throws all this stuff at you. And then it finally pulls all those elements together, and it's like, okay.
And I got to tell you, to end with this, and I promise I'll end with this, the marketing leads you to believe or want you to think that these two are going to go head-to-head and battle each other.
That is the way that the marketing sells it, yes.
And God damn it, I hate you for doing that. You pulled me in, and then you did not deliver on that. That would have been cool. It would have been better than the ending you gave me, but I'm not going to spoil that ending. If you still have interest in seeing this movie, I don't recommend it, but if you like the first one and you're just curious, great performances by Del Toro and by Brolin. Brolin's on a roll here. Make no mistake. This is his year, dude. This is his fucking year, man. Killed it as Thanos, killed it as Cable. He killed it again here. He's so charismatic. And he's still in Cable shape here, as you can see. He's still in great shape. Yeah. He looks great, too. But that's it. Epic film, guys.
Five out of ten for both. I can't remember. When was the last time that we both didn't recommend a film? Where we both rated a film negatively? I can't remember.
This is the closest thing I can get to a recommendation rating without giving it a recommendation. Yeah. It's almost there.
This is my highest failing grade. Yep, my highest failing grade. So, yeah.
There it is.
That's a shame. So we're going to run into a quick break here. And I want to talk just very briefly before we jump into the break is coming up probably within the next few weeks or maybe a month or so. We're going to be doing what I have begun referring to as Epic Quickies.
Basically, I love that name.
Basically, they're going to be 3-minute interviews. So Justin and I talked about it. We want to start doing promotion again for the podcast community, but I don't want to just play promos. I hate just playing promos. Frankly, I think that just dropping it, just throwing in a static promo, they get tired, they get old, they get boring, especially if you're somebody that listens to a lot of indie podcasts. You hear the same promos over and over. So we're going to play the promos, but we're also going to just do a very quick interview. Justin will be on one of them when he can. But most of the time it'll be me scheduling them around my schedule. Just 3 minutes with whomever the hosts are of the show to talk about their show. It's going to be a fun interview. I'm going to do some joke questions. 3 quick minutes. It's going to get you in, get you out, and just get you a little taste of who they are. So you can at least come to maybe understand them. And then, of course, we'll spin whatever promo they've got. Justin, I actually have a concept for a new Epic Film Guys promo. It's going to fucking blow your fucking socks off, man. I can't wait. I can't wait to put it together.
Your Loy socks.
It's going to blow your Loy socks right off, baby. Yeah, we're going to go ahead. We're going to run into a quick break, and then we're coming back with a small, small summit of Epic Previews to roll out the show.
We'll be right back,
Angry Old Man Podcast is a one-man voice characterization and improvisational company.
And we're back.
Yo.
We have a new friend.
New friend.
Listening to our podcast.
Oh, who is it?
Yo. Who? It's Nick.
Nick.
From the Epic Film Guys podcast.
From the Epic Film Guys.
To hear Mr. X on the World of Roe.
Yeah.
And Mr. X was on that particular podcast a couple of weeks back.
Yes.
And this is what Nick had to say about our show.
Wait just a moment, Robert.
What?
Are you sure this is not Nicholas?
Nicholas.
Nicholas Cage?
Nicholas Cage.
That is talking about our podcast?
No, it's not Nicholas Cage.
It's not Nicholas Cage because he is, all over film.
Well, I know he is.
So that's why I'm saying it might have been Nicholas Cage.
It's not Nicholas Cage.
I find Nicholas Cage so sexy.
Really?
I drip for a week.
Honey, what the hell?
I'm sorry.
What do you mean?
Curly, but, I will never get together with Nicholas Cage, but I can
You drip?
Express my
what?
Point of view
point
as
of
a woman.
View?
and how I feel.
Well, she's just expressing her point of view as a woman and how she feels.
Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly.
Take it easy.
But dripping for a week, for Christ's sake, honey. Have some decorum.
What decorum?
We're talking about a podcast.
With Nicolas Cage.
It's not Nicolas Cage.
Well, then who is it?
Yeah.
And, honey, may I ask?
Yes.
What the hell are you dripping? Aren't you all dried up already?
Lady juices.
You know, you're 70 years old.
I know, so what?
You know?
Yeah,
your juices are not flowing anymore.
Yes, they are.
Besides, we're not talking about Nicolas Cage.
No.
We're talking about a young man who is a co-host of the
podcast.
Epic Film Guys podcast.
That's correct. It's Nick and Justin.
Yes.
They really are passionate about films.
I'm passionate, too.
And very enthusiastic.
About film.
You know, it all comes through
when
you listen to their podcast. Mm-hmm. They play off each other and finish each other's thoughts as though they're an old married couple.
Mm-hmm. But just like you and I.
Right.
We're like an old married couple.
Well, we're not an old married couple, but sometimes we do finish off each other's thoughts.
Yeah, of course. And then you and honey just finish each other off.
Jeez! I swear to God, man.
What? Am I lying?
No.
See?
But you know, you can't just blurt out things like
that.
You know,
private
things. Yeah. Private.
So, basically, ladies and gentlemen, what we're saying is, if you are into films, the Epic Film Guys is the podcast for you to check out.
I subscribe.
They are, you know, there are a lot of podcasts out there about film, but they're mostly crap.
Oh, yeah.
These guys are really great.
Yes.
Epic Film Guys.
Epic.
And it's Nick and Justin.
All right.
And of course, Nick, thank you so much for the plug on your podcast.
Thanks.
Speaking of plugging.
What the hell do you mean, speaking of plugging?
Really, honey, I was just going to say
that
Nicolas Cage has a head full of plugs.
Yes.
That's all I'm saying, because he went bald very early on, and then all of a sudden there was a little kitty cat.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and we're going to wrap out the show here, Justin, with another little taste, a morsel, a little snippet. Don't do that ever again. Of epic previews.
In the world of Endicott, New York, and Herndon, Virginia, two epic film guys dissect the latest movie trailers in a segment we like to call Epic Previews.
Clear right now. If you have not watched this trailer yet, stop listening to the episode, pause it, go to YouTube or go to our Facebook page and find the trailer for Mandy and watch that and allow your mind to explode. I don't know where I've been on this one, Nick. I have no idea, but this thing just stabbed itself right up under the Halloween sequel as my second most anticipated as the rest of the fucking year. Dude, I don't know what you think of it, because I was just like, dude, watch this trailer of this new Nicolas Cage movie. That's all you got to do. And when someone says that to you, Nick, you know you're going into it with a certain mindset, like, oh, I'm watching the trailer for a new Nicolas Cage movie. You know what I mean? In this case, what you're seeing is what, in my opinion, is like Mad Max meets Hellraiser, directed by Nicholas Winding Refn, who actually did not direct this. It looks amazing. Okay, so this movie is about in the primal wilderness near the quote-unquote Shadow Mountains in the year 1983. Red Miller, played by Nicolas Cage, has fallen deeply in love for the deceptively charming Mandy Bloom. However, life he has made for himself comes crashing down suddenly when a vile brand of ravaging cultists and supernatural creatures desecrate his home with vicious fury. Yes, I'm reading from Wikipedia. Thank you very much. He's now a broken man, and now he lives for one thing, Nick.
Vengeance.
Crazy evil. He wants to go kill some of these bondage-looking, Hellraiser-like, pinhead motherfuckers.
Oh, my
God. And it just looks glorious. What did you think, dude?
This looks like the most fucking whacked-out, insane, trippy fucking experience of all time. I can't wait to see it just to see how fucked up it's going to be. I really can't. It really just looks out of this world, like, insane.
So
What are you going to do with that, man?
I'm going hunting.
So what you hunting?
It's crazy evil.
You think you're so in love? I'll show you love.
Oh, man. They wronged you. You exude the cosmic darkness.
It glowed from within, strange and eternal.
You know, there's meant to be like a devil character or some kind of demon or whatever that kidnaps her because she's always bathing and he's got that demonic voice with the reverberation in there, you know, and whatever. I'll show you love, and, you know, like,
and then you hear it echoing in the background. Yeah, oh, God, yeah. I love it.
Just like, and then, you know, you just see like Cage has always been a good actor. It's just that a lot of times he just doesn't care to give us anything aside from just Nick Cage turned up to 11. So it'll be interesting to see if he can deliver, we'll say, a great performance with some of those Nick Cage turned up to 11 elements, because we're definitely going to get them per this trailer. But I mean, I think as long as we get something in depth from Cage, it looks fucking just balls to the wall, just crazy. It looks, you know what, the best thing about this trailer is, Justin, it doesn't look like anything else that's coming out right now. It doesn't look like a generic, formulaic fucking superhero blockbuster or whatever else. It looks like it's something totally unique.
Yeah, and it doesn't
unique,
even look, Nick, yeah, totally it doesn't insane. Even look like the regular horror stuff that we've been getting either. It looks very specific, and I do liken it to the way Nicholas Winding Refn's films look like, because it definitely looks like the visual
stop
aesthetic,
trying
the purples,
to cast that fucking Paul shadow over it, so that way it's going to suck, and I'm going to hate it.
Hey!
This better
you didn't
be better
his
than
last
Drive.
Two films anyway, so you don't even know. That's Drive's true. Amazing. You're the only person on the planet that doesn't think so.
Me and Wayne. So. I love you, brother. Me and Wayne.
Oh, what does Wayne know? He's too busy getting laid all the time, David.
Well, that's very true. We all know that.
So,
but that's the best thing I think about this trailer is it doesn't look like anything else that's coming out right now. That's always a great thing when you see a trailer that's totally unique, totally from like this balls out there perspective. That's just gonna, you know, hopefully going for just some. I don't even know.
Dude, I just want an ethereal experience.
I can't even
I just
say
want something
a complete
that's
sentence
mind blowing, mind numbing.
Yeah, I can't even say a complete sentence thinking about this
that's
trailer.
That's exactly what I wanted
fucked.
To do. That's why I'm loving it, because there is no explanation. It just looks like a fucking extravaganza of shit that you're going to eat off of in your brain. Your brain just going to suck all this shit in, and then you're going to think about it after you see the movie, and you'll still be thinking about it 3 days later. That's what I'm all about, dude. I don't care. Like, it just sounds amazing. It looks amazing. I can't believe that I didn't know this movie was coming out. Like, I think I had heard the name, but I had not seen anything to do with it until this trailer landed last week and caused a shitstorm, a flood of love all over social media. So we're going to see this shit.
It looks incredible. It looks interesting. It looks, like I said, it looks unique. And I think that's always a great thing to say about anything.
Yes.
But Justin.
And we just talked about Sicario and Sicario 2 a little bit a while ago on the main review, and this was Johan Johansson's last full score, according to what the information I've received was Mandy. God rest his soul. Fantastic film composer. I hope he does some great music for this, but September 14th, Mandy, do not miss it. See it. We can't wait to see it ourselves.
For the love of God, see it. It looks absolutely amazing. So, Justin, that's going to wrap it up for 150. Happy anniversary, man. 3 years of the Epic Film Guys podcast showing no signs of slowing down or stopping anytime soon. I think we've done some of our best episodes over the last 10 or 20 or 30. So there's some really, really, really great film discussions and dissections in there. And I really, really enjoy that. And even I think today, you know, what we were able to kind of peel apart from A Day of the Soldado was really, really great. And I just wish that film had been a lot better for both of us. But
yeah,
that's going to do it You win next some, week you lose some. On the show, hopefully, we should be reviewing Ant-Man and the Wasp. Bzzz. I get to see Evangeline Lilly kick all sorts of ass. So I'm super excited for it, even though the reviews that I have read have been relatively ho-hum.
Whatever, I get to see Michelle Pfeiffer in it for a few minutes, so that's that.
Evangeline Lilly.
That's something for me, you know? I mean,
hopefully it's a good time at the cinema. Hopefully it's better than the last two outings for me. This summer started off really well for me, but unfortunately June is not really batting it out of the park so far. And hopefully, well, June didn't really bat it out of the park, I should say, and hopefully July turns that around. Because we had a pretty great May.
You still liked Blue. You just missed the Raptor Squad. You really wanted it to be Raptor Squad.
You and your goddamn Raptor Squad. But Justin, we talked about this earlier, the patron-only segment of the show. Welcome, brand new patron, Brandon. We absolutely love you. Thank you very much. He, along with all of our other amazing patrons, now gets access to our extended episodes. Last week's episode, for instance, 45 additional minutes of content, plus all sorts of extra music, all sorts of extra stuff in the segment breaks, all sorts of extra content, and you can get it all for a buck a month.
It's only like a full hard dick. You don't just get the half chubby, you get the full hard dick.
You don't just get the
tip,
you get all of it. You get fucking the full, shaft, and we'll even stuff in some of the balls in there with it.
You know? I tried extra hard to get it as hard as I could, and it's just fully and throbbing, and just for you.
Yeah, it's we you know, if you love the show, if you're somebody that really really enjoys the show and you just want more, every single episode we do an extended version where you get a pre-roll before the main show begins, and then usually there's something I'll cut out of the actual main show. So again, a buck a month, that's patreon.com/epicfilmguys. Justin, tell the fine ladies and gentlemen where they can get their hands on some EFG swag.
I was just literally
like
about to say
that. Like that shirt
you're
wearing right now, even though you can't buy that shirt anymore.
Yeah, you cannot buy this shirt. This is limited edition. Wait for it to show up on eBay in like 2 weeks. I'll put it up there for $5. But no, totally redbubble.com/epicfilmguys. Just search Epic Film Guys on Redbubble. You'll see all of our designs. You can get this stuff literally on like a woman's dress if you want to wear a woman's dress with the EFG logo on it.
We could get some leggings going on there.
Leggings, long sleeve tees, anything you want to sport the Epic Film Guys logo, you can get at our Redbubble store.
Guys, I know it's the summertime, Valentine's and Christmas are far away, but hey, if her birthday's coming up, even for next birthday, she wants EFG leggings. I know you probably want to get her a set of leggings with like the Hopester on them. Maybe we can see if we can't work with our design department.
Why you mention his name? I was just telling you earlier on in a break that I don't want to ever see him again. So it's summertime. I feel like he found a place to camp out near a dumpster far away from me. He knew I wasn't giving out free drinks.
I bet he's at Patrick Sherwood's house.
I think Patrick Sherwood's like, I think he's done with the show because he knows that Hopester's moved on and he's been done with him. So
him and the Hopester probably started their own podcast where they just get wasted and eat double cheese. Bastards.
Find all of our merchandise, redbubble.com/epicfilmguys. And yo, you know what? If you're not too busy, you like the show. If it's your first time listening to the show, or you've been listening for a long time.
If it's your first time, thank you. If you've been listening this, every single week,
head on over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. Or if you think we suck,
2, 3, 4, 5. Whatever. Doesn't matter. Just let us know that you're out there. Let us know that you love the show and that you want to hear more of what the Epic Film Guys have to offer. Again, head over to Apple Podcasts. You can find us on literally every single podcatcher under
the sun. We're on
Spotify.
We're on everything.
Spotify, everything. Stitcher, Spreaker, Podbean, where we're hosted. It's just we're everywhere. We're literally everywhere.
And www.epicfilmguys.com.
That's the hub, baby.
Yeah.
And of course, that just redirects to Podbean. But, you know, it's amazing to think that we've been doing this show for 3 long years. And like I said, we're not stopping anytime soon. We've got a lot of great, great content. I'm still going to be dumping episodes from the live stream for The Cure. Every other Monday, we just released one today as of recording day on the 2nd. Our top 10 movies that need a sequel with Paul from The Countdown in 2 weeks. Who knows? It'll be something else from live stream for The Cure. And then on the alternate Mondays, we're going to be releasing a brand new B-side or a brand new minisode or a brand new spotlight. We've got Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire coming up. As Justin said, you guys are doing Friday the 13th part
4, the final chapter.
And see, I have no idea. I was like, it's one of them. I know it's one of them. I know it's not part 6 because that's the one they already did.
No, yeah, that's right. We did part 6, which it's weird because we reversed it. because we did the screening of part four, the last Friday the 13th that we, the Epic Film Guys sponsored and I introduced, we already had the Jason Lives episode out, and now we're doing the Jason Lives showing, and now we're going to do the part four. I guess they're the fan favorites, whatever. We can't hate the fans for picking what they want to hear. We're giving it to you. You picked it. You voted. You get what you want, baby. That's
true. We should just pipe the Epic Film Guys podcast. Like, we'd pump that B-side, like, through the speakers at Alamo and just let everybody, like, before the show starts, just let them listen to that review that you and Loisos did over on B-sides, and then they get to watch the movie.
You know what? I think that Loisos might get fired if they actually
probably
hear the stuff he's going to have to say. So I don't know if I want to do that to him.
We love you, Loisos. We love all of you out there that listen to the show every single week, that support us. And, you know, literally, we cannot say it enough how appreciative we are of all of our fans that have either joined us along the way or that have been with us back since the very, very beginning, from 150 episodes, from talking into phones, Justin. And then we moved to computers with just headset microphones.
I still have my headset. Do you still have yours?
I still have mine somewhere. I don't know where it is. I put it somewhere. Actually, I might have given it to Knorr to use for something, and he might have broken it. But, yep, we had that. And then moved on to the Blue Yetis, and now, of course, to the ATRs, the mixer, all the different stuff that we've incorporated. The soundboard, rest in peace. The soundboard will return, ladies and gentlemen. Fear not. The soundboard will, every once in a while, make its voice heard whenever Justin really, really pisses me off or something that I really want to get him. I really want to annoy him or something like that. I'll break it back out. But, you know, I feel like it had just run its course. And a lot of other shows do soundboards and stuff like that now. So we're always out there looking for different ways to kind of keep evolving the Epic Film Guys. We don't want you to just always get stuck with that same old listening experience every single time, even though, I mean, our show has been relatively the same format for the past 2.5-ish years.
You know what? I've been doing something lately, Nick. Yeah. I didn't tell you what I've been doing, but the past...
Coming in your pants.
The past week, well, that too. Past week and a half, I've actually been binge watching Siskel and Ebert reviews, and they did it for 20 years, 20 plus years. And you know what? They never changed it. They stuck Siskel and Ebert. Maybe the show looked different. They updated things, whatever, but they stuck to being Siskel and Ebert, and that worked. And I feel like that's what we're going to do. So,
yeah, most likely we will always and forever be the Epic Film Guys. We're here with your unpopular opinions. We're here to talk about Cox. We're here to shit all over the things you love and shit all over the things you hate. And, well, Justin won't. Justin loves pretty much everything except for Sicario 2, apparently.
I don't like entitled fanboys that like to whine and cry on Facebook comment sections.
Wah, wah, wah. Wah, thank you.
You ruined the franchise. Wah.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are amazing. Thank you very, very much for being a part of the Epic Film Guys podcast. And thank you very, very much for all of your support for myself, for thank Justin, you. For the A1 Loisos, I guess. We're East Loisos now. A1 Loisos. Yeah. Thank you all very, very much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. And
we will see you at the movies.